Why is Elon mad at Japan?
Racism, well, I think.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, I think it is racism.
I mean, he just needs something to be mad at, and trans people just are not giving him the joy in his life anymore.
No, because they've all moved to Blue Sky.
This is Normal Men, a podcast from four men who are clinging desperately to normalcy in an era when that's asking a bit too much. I'm George in Charlotte.
In D.C., I'm Proctor Miller.
In outer Florida, I'm low-tax speedrun joy.
And in Boston, I'm Ed.
Is there still a trans community presence on Twitter?
Probably.
I mean, I'm sure there must be somebody, but like in the main, has everyone actually moved to Blue Sky, or I don't know.
I mean, the people that I know, some of them, so a lot of them play fighting games. Like a lot of the trans folks that I know play fighting games, and all of that community is still on Twitter because they are all clout poisoned to, you know, they're eating clout chips off the wall. And so, you know, they'll be there till the sun burns out, but pretty much everyone else I know has moved.
It's all love Tekken. What can we say?
By fighting games, so you mean like Tekken and Street Fighter?
I mean specifically Tekken, but yes.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, do you not know this, Mr. Speedrun Joiner?
No, I didn't know this.
I used to be a Tekken person of some note.
Oh.
Like, small note, don't get weird about it. No, during COVID, I ran like some of North America's biggest Tekken tournaments because I was really bored and had a broadcast quality deck in my house.
When was the last time a Tekken game came out?
Like last 2 years ago. Tekken 8 came out. It's not good. It's terrible. No one likes it.
Why is it worse than Tekken 7 or 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1?
Well, 7 was kind of a return to form for the series. It's actually what got me back into playing it after not playing it since Tekken Tag and, you know, the PlayStation 2. This is really boring. But anyway, I'm going to torture George with it.
Yes, boring, but I did ask.
Yes,
so.
Yes, you did. Tekken 8 made it esports, and turns out nobody wants esports. It's very swingy, and it doesn't feel like you earned it when you won.
But hold on, if there's a whole clout chasing community of Tekken players who happen to be trans,
all of them are trans, to be clear.
No, I know, but that's how we got onto this. So, you know, how do you do that without an esports tie-in? I thought that.
So for a long time, fighting games were just a thing you played with people you knew. You would go somewhere and you would play fighting games against the people you knew.
Same thing about Halo, but that was a long time ago. So
yeah, but fighting games are a little wider than that, or always were. You know, they've been having organized large scale events since at least 2000. Evo in Vegas has been a big thing for a very long time. But that goes across not just Tekken, that's Street Fighter, that's the anime games, and just like the it was
which
a
there are too many of.
Yes,
there's more than one, so there's too many of them.
It's true. Yes, they can have one as a treat, but
yes,
but like fighting games were a thing before esports was a thing, right? Like they were not making large amounts of money off of this thing, but the rise of Twitch streaming and stuff like that turned it into. You've got a few quote unquote professional, and I do use that term very loosely, players who are making enough money to pay for an apartment, off of streaming 16 hours a day until their eyes bleed. And occasionally they win an event and maybe get to order out for a week or something. I don't know. It's a pretty rough scene, and a lot of it comes down to just financialization ruins everything.
I'm never going to figure out the people that do daily 4-hour podcasts or 16 hours of streaming a day or whatever. I mean, there, and this is a wide category of people across a wide category of interest areas. I don't get it.
Honestly, the fact that they get us for 90 minutes a week is a gift.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we don't even make them pay for it.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
I should probably sit down and watch like a Hassan stream or something like that, because I'm like you, George. I'm curious as to how you even do that for that many.
I consume a huge amount of audio content. Like, let's be clear on this. I went through 3.5 podcasts on a run today, like, and not short podcasts either, but they had, each one had multiple people on it, and the topics were incredibly varied. So there was a JP Morgan research podcast. There was,
oh my God,
there was,
you did not just say that.
Yeah,
that is, that's some sicko shit right there.
I hereby apologize to the anime fighting game pervert.
What do you want from me? I got a day job.
I have never been able to listen to a podcast about anything related to my day job. I just don't care.
Yeah, well, your day job's boring and mine isn't.
Have you listened to yourself? Fucking Duke ass.
Yeah, I'm with Ed on this one.
I do feel like now I do have to really apologize to the anime perverts, though. I'm not going to, but I do have to. But yeah, I mean, like, it's all the parasocial nonsense. You can get the same experience as watching a Hassan stream by pounding a 10-centimeter nail into your forehead. But, like, it will probably hurt less because, you know, Mr. Speedrun Enjoyer is at least nominally capable of deriving meaning from words. Now, that might have been a little kind, but...
Ed is pissed. So what happened to you?
That is spicy today. Well, the Pat's lost, so...
I think Gillette should be hit with cruise missiles. Why do you think that Pat's mattered?
That's a hockey guy.
Cruise missiles don't really have enough penetrating power to do a proper job on that place.
That's true. We need those bunker busters we wasted in Iran.
That's right.
But no, just so everyone's aware, I did just have a Monster Energy drink about 30 minutes ago. So...
Hell yeah.
I'm going to be insufferable. Sorry.
You gotta sleep like a baby tonight.
Oh, don't you know it?
Well, he doesn't go to bed for another, like, 12 hours. So, I
mean, a zero-sugar mug root beer as we record, which, that's some pervert shit right there. Good Lord. I'm not averse to root beer. Root beer is a pretty respectable beverage, but zero-calorie mug root beer at 8:13 p.m. on a Sunday, brother?
That actually sounds delicious.
Brother.
I kind of want some root beer now.
They were out of A&W.
Maybe a float.
Root beer float does whip.
Mm.
Yeah. But like an A&W root beer float, like, what? Okay, so A&W in Canada is a very separate thing from A&W in the States. Mm-hmm. So A&W in the States is, I don't know if anyone's ever been to one. The only one I've ever seen is Spokane, Washington. They're very...
I've been to that specific A&W, yeah.
There you go. Right, Pacific Northwest represent. Let's go. So... A&W in the US now is basically just a root beer brand, whereas in Canada, it's a full-on fast food restaurant with a very well-established brand. It executes well. It's very widely available, and it's good. They're good. I would...
Totally reasonable burgers.
Yeah.
Proctor's family used to drive 7 hours to get to that A&W. It was the only restaurant near that part of Washington.
It's the only restaurant in the Palouse.
It's not true, but it's closer to true than I'd like to admit. Yeah, no, we were out there with our canned cheese, and that's really all we're known for.
So is it better or worse than Dairy Queen? I guess they're called Grill and Chills now.
Oh, the food is much, I mean, it is,
okay.
It's legitimately, no, I'm talking about the Canadian version. I don't think I ever actually ate at the American one, now that I think about it.
It's pretty good.
But the Canadian version, what was cool is if you ate in, you would get your soda in a glass mug, in a chilled glass mug, which in a fast food environment is a game changer because it really does hit. Like, you know, having a root beer float in a frozen, like frosted glass mug is, I mean, amazing use of $4.50 or whatever it was back in the day. Canadian, so it's, you know,
$12.50 now.
Yeah, this might have been a thing they only did on the American side, but like the frosty glass mugs also went up to like ludicrous sizes, so you could get this gigantic tankard that, at least, you know, as a as a 12-year-old boy, I was very impressed by this like half gallon tankard of root beer.
I don't think we went up to the half gallon format, but they were the bigger ones.
We're talking like Oktoberfest.
Yeah, giant novelty stuff.
The girls haul around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could buy them, of course, right? You could just take it home with you after the meal for an additional fee. And those root beer floats were, now, I'm not sure they're better than a cookout Cheerwine float, but they're very good.
Cheerwine is a regionalism for those who are unfamiliar. That is specifically, yeah, a Carolina thing.
Yeah. It's this repulsive soda they make in North Carolina and serve with everything.
I will say I'm not a huge cheer wine drinker, period. But if you can taste a cheer wine float and tell me it's a bad thing to be consuming, I will be able to tell that you're an alien with a human's flesh wrapped around you in the style of Men in Black.
I could see this working in a float. I will give you that.
Yeah.
But this sounds like, it sounds like Dr. Pepper and cough syrup.
It's not quite cough syrup. I'm not gonna try and pitch it as the world's greatest soda, but cough syrup is a little harsh.
Okay.
I would say that it is an excellent barbecue sauce ingredient. Like you can use it in some, you know, barbecue sauce type, not Eastern Carolina style barbecue, of course, because that doesn't have any sugar in it, but other more sugary implementations of barbecue sauce. Cheer wine works phenomenally as a reduction in ingredient. And it's actually, you can make cheer wine syrup that is pretty great for some cocktail applications, but I get that it's on the sweet side for people if you're just knocking back a soda.
Yeah. I mean, I'm from Maine, right?
Oh, you are?
These people delude themselves into thinking Moxie's good. So I only have so much room to like.
What is that?
What the hell is Moxie?
You've probably seen it. It's the big orange cans.
No one has seen Moxie.
No,
come on. You have been north of. Actually, maybe no, you haven't. Moxie is.
I have seen Moxie, but no. New Englanders persistently overrate the ubiquity of Moxie. Nobody else.
I mean, fair.
Nobody
else. But like, it's disgusting. So I understand. Like, Moxie is one of the reasons why someone should leave Maine. But it tastes like people want to say it tastes like root beer, but it tastes like the idea of root beer if that idea went through some particularly vile people. It's the J.D. Vance of root beer.
It tastes like you described cream soda to somebody who's never had cream soda. And then they tried to resynthesize cream soda from first principles.
The internet says a cross between Dr. Pepper, root beer, and cough syrup, and honestly, that's not a bad answer. And I don't
wait for Moxie or for Cheerwine?
Moxie.
Cheerwine, okay. Cheerwine, and this is not beating the cough syrup allegations, but Cheerwine
it's just straight up cherry.
Cherry based, yeah.
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 So. It's cherry Dr. Pepper, heavy on the cherry, light on the Dr. Pepper.
Mm. I like that George clearly acknowledges that cheer wine is bad, but no, as a North Carolinian, he feels compelled to like find a defense for it. Like, you can use it in our rancid barbecue that we make up here.
I specifically said it wasn't part of our rancid barbecue because our rancid barbecue doesn't have any sugar in it because we are decent people. Unlike,
I'm just over here trying to find if I can get some shipped because now I'm curious.
Well, wait, which kind of barbecue doesn't have sugar in it?
What do you
mean? Neither?
Eastern style North Carolina barbecue is spices and vinegar. There's nothing else
and
in it.
And it owns.
It's so good. And then you Lexington style, you get some tomato in it. So you do get some sugar in it. It's not like sugary.
Right.
But there is some chemically sugar in there. Remains much more acidic and less sugary and thinner than anywhere else in the country. And then down in South Carolina, their whole thing is mustard-based barbecue, which is just like a whole separate thing. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's very different. So.
No, it's terrible. You can say it.
Oh, do I want to rush delivery this for only $31.49?
Yes.
I don't. No, I don't. But it will show up in time for our next recording, so we'll see.
Maybe I'll get some cheer wine too for that. We can
see how terrible this stuff is.
After we've taken so many pot shots against each other's beverage selection that it's getting to become a boring trope, we can find common ground and have it.
I'm open-minded. I think Dr. Pepper is. Do not allow Dr. Pepper to touch your genitals. Not a real doctor. But what?
What in the world?
Have you never heard? You've never heard that.
Let's just glide on past.
Just move on. Just move.
Gliding is not how I would. That's not the verb. But we're gonna move on. We're gonna push.
Rush gently past.
Grind. Violent stiff arm to the face mask. Whatever it takes. Really.
I will drive down to Publix and I will get some cheer wine. We can all do cheer wine on next week's show.
Except for Propter. Propter's left out.
No, I'll get some cheer wine too. We got cheer wine around here.
Okay. I didn't know if you could get it there.
I don't know if they distribute, but there are definitely stores around here that have some as a sop to their, as a sop to the Carolina refugees.
That's right. That's fair. That's fair.
That's right.
I'm sure they have it in one of the bougie grocery stores.
Yeah.
Like, they may not have it at Safeway, and they would probably look at you like an alien at Food Lion. But
not down here. The grocery kitty down here has got an entire aisle of it.
Oh, I figured, Food Lion was just all RC Cola or something.
That's one of the things about America that is still kind of fascinating. We have kept the grocery brands. So I have no idea what you people are talking about. I've seen a Safeway once, maybe twice. I mean, I exaggerate. They're in the fetid hole that is San Francisco.
You guys are like Market Basket up there, right?
It's pronounced Market Basket.
Market Basket.
Market Basket.
I just go to Stop and Shop, which is part of the global megalith. Look, the accent's gone, but some of the words still persist. But
Stop and Shop.
Are you guys familiar with the DC Safeway taxonomy? Is that something you've heard before?
Dear God,
no.
I'm afraid.
So this has changed a little over the years. It used to be true that, you know, DC had, I want to say, 10 different Safeways that all kind of had their own personality. Like, you had Soviet Safeway that never ever had anything on the shelves. You had the social Safeway up in Georgetown where people went to go see and be seen.
You had the Safeway with a promenade.
You had the unsafe way.
Is there a reputation for the Roslyn one?
I don't remember the Roslyn Safeway's nickname. I think it had a nickname. I don't remember what it is. I'll have to look that up and get back to you.
The basement Safeway, the torture room Safeway,
the sub Safeway. Yeah, I don't know.
George appears to be drinking out of a keg right now.
It's a half gallon Yeti, and I ran 9 miles today, so I'll drink out of whatever I want.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Propter.
We'll listen patiently.
So there's a real gradation in Safeway quality within DC. So I don't know which one has cheer wine. Probably one of them does. I'll figure it out. We'll make it happen.
Fair enough.
So tune in next week for the Cheerwine Summit on Normal Men.
Ooh, maybe I'll get some Big Red.
Stop and Shop!
So we brought up Elon and racism a little bit earlier in the intro, and I feel like we should talk about that for just a minute, because we haven't talked about Elon in a little while, and it's important that we all, you know, clock in with his desires and takes.
Clocking in with his desires and takes is important, and self-care of not talking about Elon for a little bit is important. So we
can we never use the word desires in that context again, please?
So specifically what Elon is ticked about right now is that Japan is repositioning to be more friendly to immigrants. That's actually something that's been happening for a while, that immigration to Japan has picked up over recent years, because Japan has a massive, massive demographic pyramid problem where their population is aging, and it makes all the sense in the world for them to have immigrants come in and, you know, to help address that demographic pyramid problem, and also, you know, to bring rich contributions to Japanese life and culture. And predictably, people are going insane about it, like Elon.
I think Japan's had negative population growth for 25 years. Is that about right? I think they peaked in the early 2000s.
Yeah, certainly in terms of fertility, they've been under replacement value. I believe it's the last 4 or 5 years that they've kind of turned it around, in part through significant immigration, mostly from Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I'm just talking about like number of people in the country year over year, like, you know, which obviously includes both natural population increases through fertility and so forth, and also immigration, because they substantially haven't had immigration until very recently.
You weren't kidding. And I mean, like, everyone knows, you know, Japan, an older country, the median age is 50.
Yeah.
Jeez. The U.S. is 38. I'm still under it.
Yeah. East Asia is in a lot of trouble. Korea is also in bad shape on this right now.
China's got negative population growth. This is something that people don't, this doesn't get talked a lot about in the whole, you know, China hawk grand narrative of competition between the US and China, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But China has a shrinking population. Right. So if you are extrapolating forward the kind of economic growth and production capacity expansion and technological advancement and whatever you've seen for the past 20 years, which has been like world historic, shockingly impressive, fine, but you now have to do it all through per capita growth as opposed to both per capita growth and natural population growth. And again, China, like Japan, has substantially no inward immigration. So yeah, it's not just Japan. It's not just Korea. It's like the whole, that side of the Pacific.
That's, I mean, in many ways, the population growth is how you differentiate the global South at this point, because the global North is no longer experiencing population growth through fertility.
Yeah.
And most of the global South still is. I think South America has started to hit the brakes, at least in some places.
Well, recent population growth, or recent natural population growth, fertility basically has crashed around the world. It's not relative to where it was 5-10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So yes, a country like India is still experiencing quite rapid natural population growth. But if you look at where the birth rate is, it's clear that it's downshifted dramatically and now looks more like a developed country, whereas developed countries are now looking like, okay, we're below replacement rate kind of thing. And part of this was COVID, but it's not just COVID. It's a global trend that transcends that and looks very similar across cultures, economic models, geographies. You know, the starting points are all kind of different. Like you said, Latin America had much higher natural growth rates, much higher fertility until recently. South Asia had high fertility rates. Africa had high fertility rates, but you know, all of those areas are seeing rapid decelerations. And there's a lot of puzzling over this from academics who are the kind of people you actually want talking about fertility. Whereas most people talking about fertility is red flag. So
yeah. You know who I really don't want talking about fertility? Somebody who is powered mostly by ketamine.
Yes. Ketamine and selecting only male children out of IVF. That's the guy you don't want talking about this stuff.
Such a mystery how Grok started talking about white genocide. Just who knows?
Oh, he's on about that too now.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He's very concerned that the white population, however he is defining that, is now down to, what is it, 8% worldwide?
Yes. I heard that.
It has fallen from 36% to 8% in the last several decades.
Hmm. The interesting thing would be telling someone in 1900, I think that was the reference here, right? From that post?
I think so, yeah.
Let's call it 1900. Telling someone in 1900 that Irish or Italians were considered white. That would get a good reaction.
Well, I was going to say, because obviously we're rolling back civil rights, so is that percentage artificially deflated by us making the Irish non-white again?
Yeah, we need to think about that.
I do kind of need some clarity on this one, personal reasons.
Don't worry, Ed, you're white to us, buddy. Well, technically fuchsia, but
not today. I color balanced. Now I'm just like
pink, bleach out.
Every time I try to go fact check you people, I turn fuchsia. What can I say?
And it's September. I know Boston had a pretty warm summer, but you're losing that excuse pretty quick.
It is only 84 degrees in here right now.
It's going to be funny next week when he goes and takes a swig of cheer wine and you can't see the bottle as it crosses in front of his face because they're the same shade.
Next week, I will be experimenting with something new because, as you all know, but the audience does not, I'm going to go get my eyes lasered this week. So you won't even have the eyeglasses to sort of get the shadow line.
You're right.
Yeah. Is this corneal reshaping or what are you having done?
No, I'm getting ICLs, implanted contact lenses.
Nice. So the full cyborg.
So it's only a little bit of laser.
Well, that's cool, man.
Un poco laser. Yeah. So we get to do cheerwine and seeing things at their normal size. It's going to be a fun week.
From cheerwine bottle lenses to no lenses at all.
You're not kidding. But so do we need another ketamine joke or what? Can we just like pretend we had it and get back on track?
I had a question about this because so his whole thing is this anime waifu AI character. How are you introducing that and assuming it's going to have anything other than dire consequences for the fertility rate of whoever is using it? I mean, granted, there won't be that many users, so let's not ascribe too much macro impact to this thing, but come on, like, what are we doing here?
Anecdotally, I've heard a lot of people are using Grok-type stuff, so who knows how many are clicking on that very large button on the app.
He said very specifically he was going to design Grok and Annie to raise the fertility rate, to encourage people to have more kids. How you would do that, I don't know. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't either, but...
He's got a plan. Or he says he's got a plan. I also just don't understand... Look, I'm not going to kink shame here, but I don't get it. I don't get how anyone finds that vibe attractive.
Absolutely no theory of mind. Person is just a blank orb. I'm not even joking. Like, this is just the... You see a lot of them. You see a lot of these people. Just look in your Blue Sky mentions. no, not yours. Yours are probably much better. Propters, on the other hand. But
yeah, I just blocked so many people, and it's great. But the website's super usable now. It's awesome.
Yeah, but like that's really what it is, right? Like, if you look at the mentality that leads to like the absolutely disconnected, barely responding to your post comment that shows up on whenever something hits the Discover feed, it's that, but angrier, somewhat more male and younger.
Sure, I'll take that as an explanation, I guess. But let's just talk about the aesthetics. Like, I don't understand how people find cartoons like that attractive. I just don't get it. Like,
I cannot. Look, the internet's a weird place. There's something for everybody.
Annie's goth Zelda thing doesn't do it for you, George.
It's not just the attire; it's the whole concept. Like, what? I don't get it, man. Hey, you know,
if it helps, and I realize it doesn't, don't worry. Photorealism is on the way.
Yeah, it's the whole separate issue.
Yeah, but like, there's a lot of weird stuff, and like, I don't pretend to be an expert on this because I think I would jump into a vat of lie first, but a lot of this is all downstream of the exact same cycles, right? I don't know if any of you were particularly of the age and or marital status to be using things like dating apps, but like this seems like just the natural outgrowth, right? Like,
not only was I of the age and marital status to be on a dating app at one point, but that is where my current marital status came from.
So, me too. So, yeah. I mean, like, so you know then, like, you understand what a depressing thing that is. My understanding is it has gotten worse. It is not an excuse, but an explanation to some extent of, like, the level of alienation that comes out of all of this stuff. So, I'm not surprised that some folks are like, whatever, this boring, dumb, much worse than Claude Sonnet 4, AI is just, like, doing its, like, sure. Whatever. It makes the wank material.
But that's the thing. Okay, so like, being into that particular style of cartoon waifu is something that way predates dating.
That's
apps.
True. Oh, you're talking about just the aesthetic.
I'm talking about both, but I'm taking as given everything you've said about the alienation and lack of theory of mind. Like, that's a totally reasonable explanation for why someone would want a cartoon character AI to get their rocks off. What I don't get is the specific aesthetic. On top of all that, I don't get the specific aesthetic choices that are meant to be appealing that are, I don't get it. It's like trying to convince somebody that hates chocolate that chocolate is delicious. Their brain just is not going to process it.
I mean, I can't explain the why for that. I am not interested, but also like bear in mind, I can tell you where it comes from.
Please.
They're all on 4chan.
But
no, seriously, like 4chan has had a hentai board for like 20 years.
Oh, longer than that, I think.
No, isn't 4chan 2005? Something like that.
4chan exists because something awful banned the hentai board.
Right.
And a good thing we did. But yeah, like, it's just, I don't know. At this point, you're asking, like, why are the hills? The internet is like that, man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully it's their niche.
At a certain point, you're committed to anatomical standards that are incompatible with gravity, right? Like, wow.
So, this is the worst episode we've ever done.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. Yeah, it's pretty bad. If you're still listening, we really do love you. Don't forget to rate and review.
Letting white people interact with Japanese cartoons was a mistake.
Letting white people interact with Japan in general was probably a mistake.
Yeah,
they had a good little thing going over there. Like, there was one trading post and they were happy and we were happy and we ruined it. It's all ruined.
All right, we got some actual news notes here, because some things happened this last week, some of which are probably going to be important.
Trump's a stoolie.
Yeah. So one big thing that happened this week is that the sitting Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, gave a hallway interview in which he said, kind of unprompted, that Trump was an FBI informant against Epstein. And that's, he said this in a way that he didn't indicate that it was breaking, that he didn't seem to think that he was breaking news by saying this. He was absolutely breaking news by saying this. This is not something that was out there as, you know, a confirmed thing. This had been a kind of a QAnon theory for a long time. And other people had speculated that Trump had some sort of status as an FBI informant.
We should say, though, just because Mike Johnson said this does not make it true in any way, shape, or form. Like, Mike Johnson is a crazy person, so...
I would never lie to you, George. I don't know why you're saying that.
I did not make the QAnon connection until you just said that, Proctor. And now I'm like, ah, okay, that's where that comes from. Because I, under no circumstances, believe that this is a true thing, unless it comes with a number of other asterisks that they would like to keep silent.
Well, okay, so I'll take the I believe it side of this, which is sort of the soft I believe it side, which is not that, you know, Trump is an FBI informant who got into the FBI informing game to fight against child rape as personified by his good friend Jeffrey Epstein. That is not what I believe.
His very good friend.
Right. What I do think is that there are a number of circumstantial things that suggest that Trump was involved in working with the FBI to inform against specifically Russian money laundering, which he was also very involved with, in real estate, both in New York and in Florida for a long time. And that he had some kind of protection from the U.S. government that was related to informing that he did, that to some extent, this informant status may have been kind of a courtesy to get him out of trouble rather than something where he was actually providing valuable and actionable intel to the U.S. government. But, you know, he had some protector who had him on a confidential informant list at the FBI that kept him out of legal trouble that he might have otherwise gotten into, that this was essentially a VIP informant status.
I didn't catch the exact wording. What did Johnson actually say?
All right, so here's the FBI quote in response to the prompt from a reporter, but Trump called it a hoax yesterday, and Johnson said, "What Trump is referring to is the hoax that the Democrats are using to try to attack him. He has never said or suggested or implied. I've talked to him about this many times. He is horrified. It has been misrepresented. He is not saying that what Epstein did is a hoax. It is a terrible, unspeakable evil. He believes that himself. When he first heard the rumor, he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago. He was an FBI informant to try to take this stuff down."
Also, 47 minutes ago, he backed off this claim.
Someone explained to him the implications of being an informant.
And I did not see that headline before I said, just because Mike Johnson says it doesn't mean it's true. And I feel very vindicated. Thank you, Ed.
Well, to be fair, just because he says it's not true doesn't mean it's not true either. I mean, I encourage everybody to go out and go find this clip of Johnson talking about this, because this is something that he's not introducing as novel information. This is something that he thinks everyone he's talking to is aware of. that he is marshaling as, you know, one of a number of facts in support of his actual thesis, which is that Trump detests, you know, human trafficking and child rape, which, but
understated as always.
He was not trying to break news by making this statement. To me,
some
that
people just break news by being there.
To me, that lends it some credibility, not necessarily fully as something that is true, but as something that Johnson had discussed with enough people that he believes it to be common knowledge.
Yeah, but again, just because those other people are discussing it doesn't make it true, because if it's QAnon nonsense as opposed to the Russian money laundering stuff, then it's just QAnon nonsense being laundered into mainstream opinion. I mean,
but also, like, yeah, that's fair. Your phrasing doesn't really hold up. Like, that does not sound like he is talking about Russian money laundering. Well, if you take what he said as, you know, he was an informant to fight against this, I don't know.
Let's take another step back here, because the falling out between Trump and Epstein actually did have something to do with Russian money laundering. So the specific incident that, as far as people have pieced together, drove what was ultimately a lethal wedge into their relationship was Jeffrey Epstein was going to buy a property in Florida that Trump went around him to offer on. Apparently they went to go check out the place together, and Trump, without telling his good friend Jeffrey, went and offered money on it that he then sold 2 years later to a Russian oligarch for twice the amount. So fairly clearly this was something where there was some amount of financial wrongdoing taking place. This was not a property that appreciated by 100% in 2 years. This was something that was, for whatever reason, was being identified as a good place to get the money in and a good opportunity to move property to a Russian oligarch in a way that created some enduring value for them that they would be willing to pay an inflated price for. And the speculation is that that conflict between them was sufficiently bad that Trump decided to drop a dime on his former buddy to law enforcement, and that's what ultimately set the chain of events in motion that brought Epstein down.
I see where you're coming from. I do appreciate that you did tell everyone to do their own research, but sorry, I've been sitting on that one. But like,
I told everyone to watch the video, not to do their own research. Please, we're here to research for you. Did I actually say do your own research?
No, you didn't.
Good.
But I'm putting words in your mouth because it's funny. But yeah, like, the I don't know.
Now we're
like,
we're glonzoing each other now. Listen to this.
But like, I mean, I'm just going to keep sighing and I cannot possibly buy, and maybe I'm wrong, but like, I cannot possibly buy that, like, even somebody as cooked with a brain as poached of an egg as Mike Johnson thinks that that's the same thing as child trafficking. I just can't.
Well, I mean, what I think the kernel of truth there might be is that Trump was acting as an FBI informant against Epstein.
Sure, but like, okay, so like, if you're playing some entertaining games with antecedents, fine, but like, is Johnson that smart?
There's two possibilities here. One, Johnson's brain is just completely cooked on QAnon stuff. Two, he is trying to use the fact that Trump was involved with the FBI related to this Russian money laundering stuff and tangentially possibly Epstein, and he's just using that to in a bad faith way to imply that Trump was being was informing over the Epstein sex crimes and etc. There is no reason to assume that the second thing is, you know, based in reality at all, because again, we're talking about a Republican Party that just doesn't do that anymore. I mean, look how they're treating the Federal Reserve, right? I just, it's all just completely bad faith nonsense. So I really respect Propter's efforts here, but I think there's a much, much easier explanation for why Johnson said what he did and why he's now backpedaling.
Unrelated, but very funny. And this is an honest question. You shouldn't ask a question without knowing where it's going on a recording, but I'll risk it. Proctor, can you explain Thomas Massey to me?
No. So I think Thomas Massey's deal is not so much that he's the only honest man in Republican politics, it's that he's staked out position that is iconoclastic, idiosyncratic, and sort of dwindling. That, you know, these guys are all kind of figures with their own very specific constituency within the larger conservative movement. In some ways, you can think of it as kind of like a constantly schisming religion.
Yep.
And Massey has put himself out there where his little slice of the cult is not the same as the orthodox conservative movement. That it's a little bit different. And part of his brand is that he is willing to fight.
That's true. Rand Paul too. I don't think Massey is completely alone in this. Rand Paul and Ron Paul in his day as well was the same story. They were willing to say stuff that nobody else was willing to say, and that's why they were marginal figures. But there is a constituency for that stuff because every political coalition is diverse.
Speaking of marginal constituencies, I don't know if any of you have looked, but you know who one of the other Republicans who have signed on to the Epstein Files Transparency Act is?
Which House or Senate?
House.
Is she anorexic?
Yeah, MTG. It's got to be MTG, right?
No, it's Nancy Mace.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Nancy she's Mace got is... bad form and kippers on her chin-ups as opposed to anorexia.
Yeah, I don't think MTG is anorexic.
Okay.
This is very... I understand that this is the wingnut part of the wingnut party, but like... How is it going to stay there? And I don't mean this specifically the Epstein stuff, because they're on that boat and they're going to sink with it. But like, if you look at every attitude survey about the Trump administration, no one's happy. Even Republicans are getting less happy, but independents are toast. Democrats are toast. They're going to have to find some way off of the general vibe, even if they can't get rid of, you know, even if they do not somehow come to the realization that their alleged president allegedly did some really heinous stuff, W/R/T Epstein. They're going to have to find some way off. And the masses of the world are staking out a position that at least is coherent enough to get there, even if they're still batshit on their own merits. But like, they need an off ramp, because this is just going to get them smoked next year.
I mean, the governing principle of the Trump administration is all stick, no carrot, right? So I don't think the Massey coalition is the off ramp. I think
no, but they're looking for one.
I don't know that they are, though, because nothing they do is anything other than hammering the most objectionable and unappealing talking points, policies, you name it, that they possibly can. I mean, look at what happened in Georgia this past week, right? One of the largest battery plants in the country is under construction down there. It's a JV between Hyundai and LG Energy Solution. And
a JV is a joint venture for those who do not speak fluent George.
These two South Korean companies are working together to build battery factory because LG Energy Solution does extremely, extremely good battery tech, and Hyundai needs a lot of batteries for their EV manufacturing. And you know, my wife owns a Hyundai EV. They're great cars, but they're all built in Korea.
They're fantastic.
We're also an Ioniq family.
Yeah,
they're fantastic. That was the other car on my list.
Yeah, they're great. And it's in the current tariff regime, and maybe just in general, it's not sustainable to build them all in Korea. So they're going to build a bunch in the United States. Okay, great. Well, this giant battery factory got raided by ICE, and they detained 300 plus people. I think total number was over 300. Over 500, excuse me. So yes, more than 300, 500 people, give or take. And a bunch of those people were executives and corporate line workers with LG Energy Solution.
Yeah. So, okay. First, let me say that I think it is somewhat unlikely that this dragnet swept up nobody who had visa problems, that this is something that for various reasons, some of which I think are reasons I'm entirely sympathetic to, this is something that international companies with U.S. facilities often play fast and loose with the U.S. visa rules because they're a pain in the ass. And enforcement on this historically has not been such that you're going to get burned on that all the time.
Yeah, this is the technically correct is the best kind of correct, and we are not about that here.
Yeah, like, I don't particularly care that we have, you know, Koreans who are overstaying their visa to come help share technology on how to build batteries in Georgia. I think that's great. I think that's awesome. I think these visa rules are stupid, and we should encourage whatever amount of brain drain to the United States we can get. But I think that there probably are statutory violations that are caught up in this dragnet, in addition to people who have perfectly fine immigration status within this dragnet, because they were...
If for only the reason that the U.S. immigration system is a complete nightmare to navigate, and no matter how good faith your efforts are, if you're trying to do large-scale construction as a foreign company in the United States and then actually staff this place up, you're going to have a lot of your people from another country come to the United States, and navigating the insane maze of visa restrictions around that is going to be impossible to do, no matter how hard you try. So, of course, there are going to be a couple of people that have issues with it.
I've seen some people take the line that, you know, obviously these people are all here legitimately and above board, and I'm sure everything's in order. And I would not be sure that everything is in order. I think that probably there are a number of violations there that they could actually throw the book at if they wanted to. And I think that one of the reasons why we haven't gotten more specific numbers on this particular raid is that the U.S. government recognizes that it's doing something that is not a usual immigration enforcement action here, and they don't want to get out over their skis in terms of throwing the book at a significant economic partner, that they're trying to soft pedal the degree of violations rather than hard pedal the degree of violations.
But the violation of the significant economic partner is already done and dusted, man. Like, that's the whole all stick no carrot thing, right? Like, I mean, Hyundai is slated to spend, I think it's $26 billion building a steel refinery in a steel plant in Louisiana.
I do declare we're going to have a steel mill here in Louisiana.
Like, if you're sitting back in South Korea and this is how your people are being treated when, I have no doubt that both Hyundai and LG were doing their best to follow U.S. visa restrictions. If this is what's happening now, why would you consider asking your employees to risk jail time to go build a steel mill?
Why are we putting a steel mill in Louisiana, by the way? Does Louisiana have any history of producing steel?
No, but you're relatively close to bulk shipping and for iron ore, and the Louisiana or the Mississippi River, I'm sure, has some iron ore traffic. Plus, U.S. Gulf Coast, like it's easy to get iron ore in, and
Yeah. You're
also in a part of the country that's relatively close to where a lot of the growth in, for instance, autos is going to be, both Texas and the eastern part of the Southeast. So, I mean, it doesn't strike me as completely crazy, but that's all an aside.
I mean, Alabama used to be the heart of the industry, right?
Right. That's what I was thinking of. I think Tuscaloosa was like the capital of steel production in the South.
Yeah. So,
but those are all the same place anyway, right? That look on Low Tax's face was great.
No, Louisiana and Central Alabama. No, not the same place.
Anyway,
we're talking about Alabama. I don't know. Those are pretty similar.
We're talking about mayo-based barbecue versus people who actually can cook.
mayo-based barbecue.
I do like the Alabama white sauce on chicken. It's pretty great on chicken, I gotta say. I wouldn't rate it on pork, but on chicken, it's good.
So I'm learning things I didn't want to know about tonight.
One of the reasons...
All I know is... I went to Dreamland once and it was trash. That's all I said.
One of the reasons why you've had all of this foreign investment in U.S. plants for this kind of thing is that under the IRA, this was something that it was smart to do because this is how you qualified your cars as an international auto company, particularly your EVs, for the EV rebate under the IRA.
IRA is the Inflation Reduction Act, which was the big reconciliation bill passed in 2021? 2022.
2021.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. It still kills me that Still kills me that Joe Biden's signature bill is called the IRA.
I wasn't going to make the joke.
So, yes, under the Inflation Reduction Act, go ahead, Proctor.
We had been doing what looked like fairly successful onshoring industrial policy for some time under Biden that had resulted in a lot of investment and a lot of, you know, and a lot of new manufacturing jobs. Whether you thought that was a good thing. And by a lot,
what Proctor means here is literally twice the investment in factories adjusted for inflation of any other period in American history, and hundreds of thousands of new jobs associated. Both construction, actual line workers, whatever, in terms of both the manufacturing investment was realized, like that actually concrete in the ground. Hiring was planned for the most part, and other planned but not necessarily actually poured into the ground yet was another at least $200 billion above what got spent in real terms. So massive numbers here.
If you're a free trade and value chain guy like me, that's not something that you're necessarily celebrating, but also that's what Trump is, in theory, fighting for, is the onshoring of American manufacturing jobs. That's supposed to be the carrot that comes out of these tariff actions, is that we get a bunch of investment in America into heavy CapEx in American factories, and these jobs happen here instead of elsewhere. And so far, the opposite has been happening, that you've seen companies kind of running away from American investment, in part because the inputs to the manufacturing that they want to do onshore in America are getting tariffed. So it doesn't necessarily make sense for them to commit to what is an unstable and changing regulatory regime here that may also make it harder and more expensive for them to build things, even for selling into the market that they're in theory trying to get into.
Really helpful example is autos, right? If you're building an auto frame in Korea and don't have to worry about steel and aluminum tariffs of 50%, then even if you're still paying a duty that's quite heavy, 15%, let's say, I think Korea's numbers are around 15%.
I love how we don't know.
I can't remember off the top of my head what the effective rate was. I looked at it this week and
I know it's
lower than Japan, but it's higher than 10%.
So I'm not faulting you. I'm just amazed at it. Right. I mean,
look, we can go find the number, but by the time we get this edited and out to you on Wednesday, it's going to be different.
Yes. So forgive us. Anyhow, so let's say it's 15%. Why bother with trying to take all the risk of a minimum 3-year, probably more like 5-year investment plan to go from an empty field to a fully producing factory, and then all of the risk around the existence of that capital for decades to come, when you can just bite the bullet and pay the 15% and whatever. If you were making that same car in the United States, on top of having higher labor costs, probably by a fair bit, but maybe not as much as kind of is advertised, you're also going to have to deal with higher input costs, higher costs of components because of tariffs, higher costs of raw materials because of tariffs. It's just, there is no reason to do that investment. Whereas the IRA took the completely opposite view. It said, look, if you don't want to invest here, that's fine. You're not going to get the goodies. If you want the goodies, you got to invest here. And we'll, by the way, we'll make it cheaper for you to invest here. And there you go. And that spurred massive investment. So it's really, you could argue really that the IRA was all carrot, no stick, and that the Trump tariff approach is all stick, no carrot. And it's clear that while the optimal is probably a little bit of each, all carrot worked a lot better, if your goal is we build more stuff in America.
And if cars aren't doing it for you, because I fell down this rabbit hole over the weekend, how about computer chips, right? Because like TSMC, they've been building out a multi-fabricated, they call them fabs. They've got
TSMC is Taiwan Semiconductor. They are basically the biggest producer of the raw, like raw microprocessors.
They manufacture chips to other people's designs, and correct, those people include folks like NVIDIA, Apple, AMD, Intel, which, you know, I'm sure that's really fun for their fabs. But so they've been planning out a 6-fab campus in just outside of Phoenix. One fab is done. There's 5 to go. They're looking at doing a fairly high-end process here. Their 4-nanometer stuff is not necessarily their absolute leading edge stuff, but that's still very competitive for very common high-end chips. I struggle to see why they would finish the other five, right? In the current regulatory environment, because is there going to be sufficient demand to do that here? Just based off of setting aside all of the other uncertainty, like those are inputs into other people's processes. And if those processes are getting turned upside down, where are you going?
I think TSMC is a little bit of a special case because Taiwan could get Thanos'd by China tomorrow. Thanos snap.
True. But like they have to be willing to do it, right? Like one of the things about
I'm just saying that's a very different calculation from, for instance, SK Hynix or LG Energy Solution. True. Or, you know, Volkswagen, right? Like they don't have an existential risk looming across a very small stretch of water.
Right. And like that's why the higher end nodes are staying in Taiwan, at least for now, as I understand it. But like still, like they make a lot of money. Are they going to make more of an ocean of money by actually finishing this stuff under the current regulatory regime in the US? I think it's hard, genuinely hard to answer that.
There's a big difference between finishing an existing project and going ahead and starting a new one. That's
true.
That's you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, but it's going to be a bad time either way. Is kind of what I'm getting at.
I mean, I will say with chips, because the chips thing is like a pretty specific example where I think the logic is a bit different. In part because the Chips and Science Act didn't get gutted the same way the IRA did, and chips also are really relevant for AI, and that's a whole prestige project for the Trump administration. And I don't know. I hear you. I mean, I just think it's a special case. But I think for almost any other industry, yes. Why would you bother? Like, why would you mess around with pouring capital into this particular economy when the alternative is paying a modest fee? And there you go. Them's the breaks.
No, I get you. Because like one of the thing about like AI though is that's all on the newer processes. So that's why I'm a little less sure about it.
Again, it's the vibes, right? It's not it's oh we want AI.
Oh God, you're right.
You know, like
I keep saying it's about the vibes, and then I keep discounting the vibes.
So this is this is vibe fabbing, perhaps.
No,
stop.
No. All right, we'll jail. Take that.
No trial.
Stop the ride. I want to get off. Gentlemen, have you ever seen the movie Sicario? Do you like playing the home game? Because this week has been something, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just murdering people now.
Maybe. For our... Venezuela is asserting that it is that was AI.
Okay. I look, maybe I'll give it 1 to 5% chance it was AI.
What would you give it, Ed?
I agree with you, but I have no idea.
So what we're talking about here is we were talking about a video and video of a missile strike on a boat that was coming from Venezuela that had 11 people on it that allegedly was carrying drugs, maybe, and was allegedly going to either the United States or maybe to Trinidad.
What was the actual location? It was in international waters. Where, for reference, like, are we talking west of Puerto Rico here, roughly? Is that kind of the way to think about it?
I think it had a long way to go to the States, I'll say that.
I mean, we're not talking about, like, they're rounding Cuba. Like, they're out there still.
Yeah, this was still very much South Caribbean. I think that there was some amount of question as to whether or not that boat was capable of making it to the United States, given the size of the boat, where it was going, and you know what its probable fuel reserves were.
It looked like a pretty tiny boat from the video I saw.
It had outboard motors. I mean,
yeah, I mean they were talking about 11 people and then, you know, 700 trillion pounds of stuff to make meth. It didn't look like that to me.
Enough to get every American high five times.
Yeah, speaking of movie references, this was not the Go Fast boats from Miami Vice. This was a much lower rent operation.
Oh.
No, this was...
George
was
a man of culture.
This was Bubba down at the lake.
I used to watch that thing on my iPod. I was so into that movie.
So we're talking about Sicario, which has as a plot point the use of the U.S. military against drug operations to the south of the United States. If you are older or more dad-coded, you may be more comfortable with Tom Clancy's Clear and Present Danger as the parallel. either of those works, it's kind of the same deal. But what we have is we have the Trump administration with the participation of the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense, at least, probably a lot of other cabinet members as well, ordering a missile strike on a boat that no one contests is a civilian boat. Everyone agrees that this is a civilian boat.
Again, in international waters, that's relevant as well.
Right. That is a no-no. That is a foul. You are not supposed to do that.
I just to be clear, there is no way under international law to do that in any legal way. That is straightforwardly, it's not a gray area kind of oopsie. No, it's you do not do that. It's a very old standard too. This is not something that was invented 20 years ago. This is, if you're not a direct threat to the power in question, whether it's, you know, they're on one of their civilian ships or a naval vessel or whatever, if you're not a direct threat to them and you're in international waters, you can't shoot them unless you're in a state of war. And we are not at war with Venezuela the last time I checked. That's it. And even then, if it was a civilian vessel as opposed to a military one, you can't do it. It's just, it's murder. It's murder. Like, we murdered 11 people on a boat in the South Caribbean.
If they were British, I'd let them go as a treat, maybe.
You're really going to make me go bleep that.
Yeah.
Here
we are.
A lot of the law on this comes from literally British piracy. So, like...
it's two.
You're allowed to do things like stop these boats. You're allowed to board them. Under some circumstances. What you're not allowed to do is just sink them.
Yep.
That's again murder.
If let's do a hypothetical here. Let's say a U.S. Coast Guard cutter or a Navy frigate, whatever, pulls up beside this boat, orders them to stop for inspection. Okay, now we're in a gray area under international law where the legal beagles can start having arguments about what's allowed, what's not. Maybe there's a warning shot fired and they don't stop, and then there's some sort of violent interdiction. At that point, okay, I'm not going to say that everything's kosher, because again, I'm not a lawyer. Don't trust me on the specific legalisms here, but at least there's some room for debate. That is not what happened. We conducted an airstrike on a boat that looked like about the size of the one I used to go boat camping on as a kid. With no warning, it was not a threat to any American or American territory or American possessions directly. It was not. It was straightforwardly not. Carrying drugs is not at that standard. It's just not. So we murdered 11. Our country murdered 11 people. End of story. It's just brutal. I'm getting really worked up over this. I'm sorry to the other men, but like,
no, I mean, you should. And as an aside, apparently the AI comment was from the Interior Minister of Venezuela. So, you know, not so much the folks who are currently having to deal with Donald Trump as a belligerent, but like, yeah, it is. Astonishing we have not heard more on all fronts, right? Like, it took how many days for them to back reference a legal argument for doing this? And as I forget who said it, but if you have to go look for a legal argument, that means it wasn't legal. I can't even say it's the most astonishing thing, because like, I want to, but it's I genuinely don't know, and tomorrow is another day, right? It beggars belief that they're just doing this.
It represents an escalation into a new direction that I think a lot of us are worried might be the direction to come for strikes, not just in international waters, but there's a lot of concern that we're going to go to war with cartels in Mexico, or we're going to go to war with people who we think are cartels, are cartel people in Mexico. And
yeah, how's that going to go?
I think that there's been some amount of magical thinking about the consequences of,
I think magical stuff. Thinking is a good word, and honestly, it is a word you can expand into most of the way that these morons operate on pretty much every level, right? Like, none of this is about how or why. This is about this is an ends-based ideology at best. But
I think even that's giving it too much credit.
That's true. They think they know what the ends they're looking for are.
Yeah.
And like you, it is a comprehensive failure of knowing how things work, right?
Thing that I think is interesting about the Venezuela strike in particular is that we haven't really gotten a TikTok of what happened. We don't know who gave the order.
We don't mean a short form video. We mean a detailed reported piece going through what happened. Yeah.
TikTok claims another thing.
Maybe that's how they release statements at this point in short form.
At the very least, you got to give me a 500 page like Cy Hirsch derangement piece of some kind in Vanity Fair,
or you know, real time timestamped signal chats about.
This is so bad. I think there should be a legitimate discussion about who pulled that trigger, like what. Hapless airmen somewhere pulled that trigger, and should we prosecute them?
And should we prosecute whoever gave them the order? And should we prosecute
I'm for sure the people that gave the orders, but I'm talking about the people that executed them, because this was clearly an illegal order. Like it is black letter international law. There was no reason for this to have taken place, and whoever pushed that button, whatever the last human in the chain was that pushed the button, broke the law.
Yes.
They broke the law and they killed 11 people, and they should probably face consequences for that. I'm open to hearing an argument as to why they shouldn't, because they were following an order, but following an order is not an excuse for getting away with a war crime. It's not. It's never been that way. So
UCMJ is remarkably clear on this.
Yep. So someone gave a lot of people gave an illegal order, and someone followed it. And the people that gave the illegal orders should absolutely face consequences, including jail time. They should have the book thrown at them. But I think we should throw the book at the poor grunt that had to go through with it, sitting in some sort of trailer outside of Las Vegas that actually clicked that button. Because they broke the law, and they murdered 11 people.
And they should have known they were breaking the law.
I mean, there is no way they didn't know they were breaking the law. There's no way.
One of the things that potential legal exposure from this, not just within the United States, but internationally does, given the people who have claimed involvement, is it creates criminal liability for our Secretary of State, which is a little bit of a problem if your job description is to travel internationally. It's unclear exactly how that's going to shake out in terms of international response. So far, it seems like largely the international community would prefer to pretend this didn't happen.
Good luck. It's going to keep happening.
They've been saying that a lot, and there's a point which they can't.
There is, but we're not at that point yet. No one's going to do anything. The Europeans aren't going to do anything.
You're probably right.
No, you're probably right, but it's just going to keep happening. Look, when the bully is taking your lunch money, there is one solution. And it's not giving him more lunch money. That's it.
But who's going to do that?
Someone that's put into a position where they have an imperative stronger than their fear of whatever the U.S. retribution for standing up would be. And I think you're right that we're not there yet. There have been already very large imperatives created in reaction to how the United States has behaved. Look north of the border and how the Canadian election turned out, right? That is obviously not an analogous situation, but eventually someone's going to press the button, and it's not going to have been a Venezuelan drug boat. It's going to have been, I don't know, a Dutch container ship, whatever it is.
It's going to be a wedding in Mexico. It's going to be...
At some point, there will be a large enough, not American, but domestic to whatever international country is involved, feedback that they'll say, screw it, this isn't worth it anymore.
I think that one thing that this changes is the internal dynamic within the administration. Because people have taken on vulnerability to actors outside of the United States government that they now need the United States government to protect them from. This binds people like Rubio more tightly to the administration, because that's his ass in a sling right now. He has criminal exposure now internationally that he needs to remain an agent of the United States in the good graces of the President of the United States to be protected from in any sense. Hegseth is in the same boat, that he has now, I mean, Hegseth probably did this a number of times already, but he has now sufficiently dirtied his hands that he needs to stay close to Trump. And as we get further into purge season, which I think is going to be coming for this administration soon, as people get exiled from the movement, I think that those dynamics are unfortunately going to be a thing we have to keep track of, that we need to keep an eye on who it is who is capable of walking out the door and who is no longer capable of walking out the door.
Well, at least we know we'll have a national archivist for a while.
I just want to say on a side note, at some point, George and Propter and I should do, remember the movie Super Troopers?
Oh, of course.
They do the meow bit, but we should do it with the word British for Ed.
What we'll do next week when we do the Cheerwine Summit is we'll, like with the syrup chugging, we'll do Cheerwine chugging. It's a syrup. Pretty similar levels of sugar.
I ordered diet.
What? That's not cheating. That's not fair. I've drank diet Cheerwine. That's that ain't it.
You know, if you like what the Broken Lizard guys do, I actually really enjoyed Tacoma FD recently. It's two of the Broken Lizard guys are now doing a sitcom about a Tacoma fire department that is a throwback sitcom in every imaginable way.
I'm really glad you finally gave me like half of a clue as to what you were saying, because I was a little bit worried about an episode.
Any leader of cola bits?
I got nothing.
It's a Super Troopers reference. Yeah. Farva wants a leader of cola.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie you referenced? Propter, killing me.
Yeah.
I will say, when you're growing up in the mid-2000s in rural Canada, you probably watched Super Troopers like roughly 1,500 times. So, yeah.
Awkwardly enough, in Maine, that was Canadian bacon.
I have never seen any of these movies you guys are talking about, except for Super Troopers.
Oh, I was going to say, if you haven't seen Super Troopers, you would... yeah, okay, but you've seen it.
Canadian bacon is worth your time.
Okay, I have not seen Canadian bacon, and I have not seen Sicario.
It's terrible.
Oh, no, but well, so here's the thing.
Well, it's terrible in retrospect. The movie's fine.
I'm just marshaling my thoughts here. First off, Emily Blunt is a goddess, so like, let's be really clear about that, right? Like, you watch it just for her. Just fantastic performance. She's gorgeous. She's super, super talented actress. All that. It's also, Villeneuve is really, really good at landscape cinematography. Mm-hmm. And that movie delivers on landscape cinematography in a way that is very hard to overstate. It is phenomenal. It does just an incredible job. It's also really well paced. The actors are interesting. There's a lot of really good tension in some of the action scenes. It's a quick moving plot. Like, all the technical aspects of movie making, it just hits. It's great. The plot and the message are, yeah, it's not wonderful in retrospect.
Yeah. In 2015, it was a much different movie.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. But you should see it. You should see, don't see Sicario 2, The Day of the Soldado or whatever, because that is just full on, like, that's not Villeneuve anymore. And it's like,
wasn't sure if you had did it.
Yeah, no. Sicario itself is absolutely worth your time. And I actually went on one of the bonus episodes that the 5-4 folks did for like Night at the Movies and talked about film of movies. And I think I put it at number 2 for me after Arrival.
That's a strong recommendation.
Yeah.
Sicario is also notable because it was Taylor Sheridan's screenwriting debut. And yeah. Taylor Sheridan has become a more significant figure in both American politics and American film since then.
Much more, yeah. It's so interesting watching Taylor Sheridan's descent into his own, getting high on his own supply. Because if you watch Yellowstone, there is some genuinely interesting stuff going on in terms of the political message and the sort of like cultural and ideological message of what's going on. It's, I think you can, there is a subtext that is not pure reaction. But then you fast forward to his latest one, the Texas Oil Country one, what's it called?
Tulsa King?
No. Is that Taylor Sheridan? I don't think that's Taylor Sheridan. It's the other one.
I think he wrote it, but...
Oh, he did. Okay. Yeah. Well, the one with Billy Bob Thornton.
Landman.
Yes, Landman. Yes. And it's pure reaction. It's pure, like, there's Billy Bob Thornton doing a monologue about how it takes more oil to make a wind turbine than whatever. And, you know, a teenage couple skinny dipping in a reservoir for a coal plant or whatever are talking about, you know, energy politics. It's deranged. It's just a completely, like, there's no art. There's no... It's nuts. I'm not exaggerating. That scene actually takes place. And it's just, it's nuts. So yeah, he has cooked his brain. Maybe worse than someone like Nate Silver. Like, completely cooked it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
There's too many shows.
You get, particularly in the arts, you get this process where somebody starts moving in a conservative direction and the audience capture locks in really quickly.
David Mamet?
For instance, yeah. Mm. I mean, sometimes those guys never reach escape velocity, right? So, like, you get the Rob Schneiders of the world who have sort of locked themselves into this tiny corner where basically they're part of the Adam Sandler extended universe, and also they're, you know, one of the conservative actors in good standing.
And that's one of the meanest things you've ever said.
I mean, Rob Schneider knows that I feel that way about him.
Does he?
Blocked on Twitter.
But you also get guys, and it's almost always guys, who are legitimately talented and have some things to say that wind up kind of going through this dip and being an acceptable and approved conservative artist. And then often sort of come out the other side when they realize that maybe they're not doing strictly what the movement needs from them right now. I'm thinking of like a Clint Eastwood type here, who for a moment looked like he was going to be the shining star of American conservatism, and then kind of kept on making movies that were about what Clint Eastwood thinks and that were still definitely conservative, but we're no longer fully aligned with wherever conservatism went after that.
Conservative v fascist, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Mel Gibson, who...
God. I haven't even thought of Mel Gibson in a very long time.
Passion of the Christ 2, summer 2027. Get ready, baby.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how that one ends.
Is it actually about Paul and stubbing his toe on the way north, or like what?
Oh, fuck if I know.
I'm Jewish, man. I only got through the prequel.
I really would love to see a prestige drama about the early Christian church, though. Not because, you know, it would be like oh, it's a story of heroes or whatever, but because it was such an interesting society and such an interesting
it's
social dynamic.
It is a super interesting, both internal and external, right? Like the external, I think you get 100 years after and things start really spicing up, but like the internal dynamic, you know, right at the time of inception is like really fascinating. Because it's not just, you know, it's genuinely multicultural in a way that I don't think people really understand, right? Like, you've got, there's a reason why Paul's writing letters, and it's because they have to go a really long way. And like, I don't know. I would love to see that. I don't even watch TV, and I'd watch that.
That's our show this week. From Charlotte, I'm George.
From DC, I'm Propter.
From outer Florida, I'm Low Tax Speedrun Enjoyer.
Representing all of New England, I'm Ed.
Stay normal, y'all.